You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area's talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
On this episode of In-Depth, we turn to Odyssey's I'm Listening, Talk Away the Dark. Odyssey's David Glover will be speaking about men and mental health with Victor Armstrong, Vice President of Health Equity and Engagement for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Steve Seipel, longtime AFSP volunteer and advocate. Then David will talk about mental well-being in the military with Alex Silva, AFSP expert and veteran, Dan Miller, Wounded Warrior Project guest and Marine Corps veteran, and Dr. Aaron Fletcher, Wounded Warrior Project clinical expert.
The reason I'm actually here is that in 2002, my brother Keith ended his own life. And standing literally, this is very dramatic, but standing literally at my dad's casket in March of 2002, my brother talked about taking his own life. We all know who are involved in this, who have been through this, that there's some people who never talk about it. And there's some people who talk about it a lot. So since then, that's been sort of my mission, is to do whatever I could to help with suicide prevention. My first guest is Vic Armstrong. He's an AFSP expert. He was born and raised the son of a pastor in North Carolina. As such, he developed an appreciation for the challenges experienced by historically marginalized communities. Steve Seipel is also with me, and Steve has an amazing story. Suicide and suicide prevention have touched at least three generations of his family. Steve, let's start with you. Please tell us your story.
I lost my father in 2001 to suicide. He was 53 at the time. After a couple of years of working through that complicated grief, I actually had found the Out of the Darkness Community Walk, the first season of those with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Another mother of one of our kids had reached out to my wife via email looking for volunteers to help organize this walk. That mom had no idea that I had lost my father to suicide. So it was a very direct answer to prayer that I had during that season to do something positive with my tragedy and help other people through my experience. And it's been, 2024? It's been 20 plus years that I've been involved with AFSP.
You eventually had your own struggles with mental health and with suicidal ideations. Can you tell the audience about that?
I did. About 5 years ago, I was in between jobs, as they say. I was really struggling towards the end of the calendar year with what my future held and really trying to hold our finances together. And I had a pretty acute suicidal ideation one day. And then the next week, I had a friend, I was at a meeting and was with another friend of mine who's a volunteer for AFSP. We left that meeting outside of the building. My friend turned to me and noticed that there was something different about me and came straight out and asked if I'd been thinking about suicide.
Which is really what we're talking about today. During this episode of Talk Away the Dark, we're focusing on men and struggles with mental health and suicide. What was it about thinking about not being here anymore that seemed like a relief to you?
There was an acute pain. You know, there was a feeling of doom and hopelessness that I had that I couldn't shake. And I had had that before, but it's a spectrum, right? It was at a point where I had actually gotten to the point where I had brought the suicide prevention text number up on my phone and started a message, but didn't send it. So it was that close. I have found also that, at least for me personally, you know, that the acuteness of that moment, it usually lasts about 10 or 15 minutes. If I can get through 15 minutes and be safe, then it usually will leave me. Now, that may not be the case for everybody, but I think there's a lot to that. The biggest risk factor for our demographic is loneliness. And if we're alone, that's the greatest risk of suicide, I think.
I relate to that. My style of suicidal ideation is wishing there was a wizard who could just push a reset button so that I wouldn't be blamed for anything, so that no one would be mad at me, so there'd be no guilt. But if I could just push that reset like on a video game and start over again, or just kind of go into a soft oblivion, that was what seemed like a release to me. Steve, when your friend asked you so bluntly, are you thinking about killing yourself? What did that do? Was it like the proverbial slap in the face?
It was more like a waterfall shed, you know, a waterfall of emotions. I teared up. I admitted I had. I thanked her immediately. That was the button that needed to be pressed for me to, one, you know, increase the frequency of my therapist visits, two, admit to my wife what I had been feeling. I hadn't even admitted it to my closest love. It was like a permission to talk about it.
Vic, does a lot of this hit in tune with you and your background and your pursuits?
Yes, I'm sitting here listening to both of you. I think so much of what you're sharing both aligns with a lot of what we know about suicide, and also in the way that you talk about some of your experiences and the way that you deal with it. There are also some things that you're doing that I think are just are naturally the way that survival instinct sometimes can kick in. As I'm listening to you, Dave, even as you were talking about your reset, oftentimes what we do find, and this also ties in to Steve's story about how the acuteness lasts from 10 to 15 minutes. Oftentimes, if we can get past that 10 to 15 minutes, if we can get past that temporary acuity, we can hit that reset. And it doesn't mean that your suicidal thinking completely goes away, but that moment when you are in that darkest place to where you are planning to end your life, if you can get past that moment, oftentimes you can find your ability to reset. And what also happens then is, even as you're thinking about that, if you had a magic wand, if you had a wizard and you didn't have to do this, didn't have to be here, what also happens sometimes is when we talk about it, even as Steve's friend asked him what was going on with him, sometimes we talk about it, we ask the question, and then we listen, and we people an opportunity to talk about what's going on with them. Oftentimes people find a way to talk themselves through that that 10 to 15 minutes of acuity, ever how long it lasts. So even in that time when you're thinking about, well, what if I didn't have to do this? What if I didn't have to be here anymore? What it also allows you to do is think about, how did I get to this point where suicide became the answer? And if you can start to think about that, sometimes we can get ourselves through that moment. But also when you're dealing with someone who is in that dark place where they're really thinking about suicidality, sometimes asking them that question, are you thinking about killing yourself? And then how did this become an option? How did you get to the mm-hmm. point where suicide was the answer for you? When they start to talk through it, you often will find out that it's not that one event, that one trigger that we often think is the thing that bring someone to that point of suicidality. It's often a combination of things. I often tell people the way I talk about suicide is that we tend to talk about it as like suicide itself is a disease. Suicide itself is not a disease. It is the worst possible outcome mm-hmm. of a combination of a lot of very complex things, often including mental health challenges. But that also means that if it's a combination of those things, there are also opportunities to intervene if we have the right access, the right resources at the right time. And sometimes that intervention can be that one person who says to you, are you thinking about suicide? And asks you the question, talk to me about this. Tell me what you're feeling. Tell me how you got to this point. And then that gives you that ability to reset.
Yeah, Vic and Steve, what you're saying makes me think about, we all have that voice in our head. and the meanest guy I know is the voice in my head. He does not like me. And we all know that when you talk to a friend and your friend has these insurmountable problems, you can solve their problems pretty easily. You can say, look, buddy, you told me five things. We can work through all five of these things. When it's you, it's so much more difficult. Let's talk about, as men, why do you think this, and how do you think this affects us in particular? This waterfall effect of stress and problems, and I just can't get out from under this.
We're wired to provide and to solve problems and to produce, you know, as men, I think. And it's just natural to be, you know, mentally working on something. Unfortunately, you know, as you said, some of us will get to where we're trying to solve a lot of problems that, you know, either don't exist and are just perceived, or we're overstating the severity of those problems.
Yeah. And I think for me, I think the good and the bad is that the voice in my head loves me a whole lot. The voice in my head thinks something, just thinks I'm the coolest person in the world sometimes, which also means that voice thinks that I can overcome anything. Mm-hmm. That voice in my head thinks that I should be able to power through anything. And I think as men, we're socialized to really believe that strength is in being able to do it by yourself. That it's a sign of weakness when you have to ask for help, or it's a sign of weakness when you have to admit that you feel vulnerable. I used to work for several years counseling men who were court ordered for domestic violence. And even in those situations, I often found that men didn't have the language to talk about emotions. Mm. And that impacts our mental well-being, because when we can't identify that what we're really feeling is loneliness, or what we're really feeling is fear, we tend to attach other emotions to it that we can identify with. And sometimes that's either anger, or sometimes it's failure. We see ourselves as failures because we can't power through something. Yeah. And so I tell men all the time, I tell couples all the time, that one of the best things that you can do for the man in your life, the men in your life, is create safe space for them to be vulnerable, to talk about when they're feeling like they're overwhelmed, or when there are things that they feel like they can't deal with, as opposed to feeling like I can't show vulnerability. I've got to be able to show strength.
And what I'd like to do, in case I have failed to ask some of the right questions, or there are some roads we didn't go down, let's just kind of each take a turn. And, you know, final thoughts or some things that we've learned today. I'll lead it off. I will always remember, I'll call it the 15-minute rule, Steve, that you brought up, and Vic, that you confirmed. Get through the 15 minutes, and if you start feeling like you can't, pick up the phone, dial 988, call your best friend if you think you're not going to make it through that 15 minutes. Steve, how about you? Final thoughts.
It took everything. When I was in my dark place, it took everything. Mental health therapy, it took medication, it took exercise, it took a healthy community of men socially, it took my faith. It takes so many things to just use every resource and think about every aspect of life in terms of keeping your mental health in check.
Vic.
If you are concerned about someone that you think may be thinking of suicide, don't be afraid to ask them the question clearly, concisely, confidently, are you thinking about suicide? And you may not be able to move someone from their suicidal thoughts in one conversation, but you can absolutely save a life in one conversation. Mm-hmm. If you can get that person just to pause and reset. And to anyone out there who's listening, just know that if you're struggling, your pain matters, your life matters. And if you are considering suicide, or if you're just experiencing some kind of mental health challenges, get help. And you can always dial 988 and be connected to a trained counselor who can connect you with the help, with the services, with the support that you need when you need it most.
You guys have been listening to Talk Away the Dark, in Odyssey production in association with American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Again, if anyone is struggling and it is emergent, pick up the phone. If it's something that you're not in your 15-minute window, go to afsp.org. Steve, Vic, can't thank you guys enough. I've learned a great deal. It's meant a lot to me, and I hope to talk to you in the future. Thank you so much.
In Depth will return after a moment.
The military has always been important to me because I never served. My dad joined the Navy after Pearl Harbor when he was 17 years old. My brother volunteered for the Army in 1971. And when I graduated in 1982, it just didn't seem like a thing. It wasn't important to me. And I've since regretted that. One of the biggest regrets that I've had. So that's why I'm here now to the important people. Dan Miller served in the Marine Corps literally for decades, law enforcement. He's now a national speaker. Dr. Aaron Fletcher is the director of the Warrior Care Network, a clinical partnership between Wounded Warrior Project and four of the leading academic medical centers. Alex Silva was active duty Air Force from 2011 to 2023 and is AFSP's first manager of military suicide prevention. Dan, let me start with you. Dan, as I described, I'm here because I lost my brother. You have lost many brothers. Can you talk about that?
I lost a lot of friends and people that I knew because of being in Iraq and because of combat in Iraq. And, you know, that hurts. People say, well, that's what you signed up for. Yes. Okay. I signed up to be a Marine. We were Marines. We knew what we were getting into, but that doesn't make it hurt any less. But when we came home after my third deployment in 2008, everyone's so joyous at being home. We made it. We're sad for those that didn't come back with us. We memorialize them. We keep their families close to us and in our hearts. But then over a period of years, we've lost more and more Marines, you know, due to suicide. We're up to 11 now. And that hurts even more because they made it home. They made it through some really hard days and some really bad places. And we struggle. And when I say we, myself and my fellow Marines that I served with over in Iraq, and they're the people that we lost, their family members, their loved ones, their friends. It's a struggle to understand. And we fight to figure out what we can do to change it. And that's one of the reasons I belong to Wounded Warrior Project, because of my own struggles when it came to suicide and then the loss of my friends and trying to figure out a way to change the direction on this and figure out something we can do better so that I don't have to keep going to, or anybody has to keep going to these funerals for these men and women that gave so much, came home and made it. And then, you know, couldn't figure out another way or felt that there was no way else or there was no way other way to figure out a problem than you know, the route that they finally took. And so it hurts a lot of people, you know, so we fight every day to figure out how we can change that.
Dr. Fletcher and Alex, maybe you can jump in on this next question. So survivor guilt has become cliche, like PTSD. You know, people say I have PTSD because they got the wrong bread on their sandwich. We belittle it and we use it too flippantly. But to the extent that you have suffered from survivor's guilt, could you talk about that?
So the entire system is built around learning attention to detail and being inspected and making sure that your area is perfect. A lot of the military, even today, you know, you can have somebody who gets a DUI and that person's supervisor or sometimes even their entire unit might show up at 6 o'clock in the morning with their full service, you know, uniform on, which they might not have even worn in 2 years, you know, to look at that person who got a DUI and explain to the commander why they weren't there for them. And so when you talk to this group about suicide, it's a doozy. It's not something where you can just go to a civilian and say, who's going to say, yeah, I feel guilty sometimes too, because of course it's a very common thing. But when you're formally charged with the well-being of people around you and everything they do is either your success or your fault as their person, except suicide, it's a hard thing to swallow.
When I, as a civilian, think about mental health struggles in the military and especially suicide prevention, I think about Dan. I think about people who have been in active combat. But you said 85% of the military don't, and yet they still have their own struggles. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think of one really good example is that when we think about, somebody who sees a lot of combat, what about a drone pilot? What about somebody who doesn't go to combat, but is still asked to do very difficult things? And then they might have the experience of, you know what? Well, nobody shot at me. Nobody, I didn't have to go and leave my home and my family, but they still have to deal with things. And that is just such a radically different issue. And then when you talk generationally, right? So yeah, it's so different depending on who you ask, what their branch was, what their culture was. I'm learning just about as much from Dan as everybody else is, because I was not in the Marines. I did not do 30 years. I did not. I mean, I worked in the Air Force medical, mental health, substance abuse world. You get a lot of access to people who have done different things. And I think that's something that you see that is very common across career fields, is this belief that if you seek help, that you are forfeiting your career. And it makes sense to feel that way, especially, you know, you go to a recruiter's office and one of the first questions they're going to ask you is, you know, did you ever in your life have any problems with mental health or suicide? And if you want to get in, the correct answer is no. But then once you're in, it can feel like if somebody asks you, are you thinking about suicide, that really what they're asking you is, do you want to go to the hospital and lose your clearance and forfeit your career? And so getting a chance to really learn about what the process is by being part of the process is that if there's any takeaway that if there's anybody in the military or somebody who knows someone in the military who's listening, to pass on that it's counterintuitive, but when somebody self-identifies and says, I'm struggling, that is actually a really good indicator that that person can be relied upon and keep secrets, and that they will self-identify when they need to get help.
And I just want to add, I know that, Dr. Fletcher was getting ready to say something, so I was very interested to hear what she had to say.
Yeah, I'm watching Dr. Fletcher nod along, so I as well would love to get your medical professional take on this.
I wanted to bring it back to something that Alex had just mentioned around, you know, is it only folks in combat situations that feel these, you know, whether it's suicidal thoughts or whether it's mental health challenges more so than others? And what I can say from my experience and the data that we collect at Wounded Warrior Project, which our, you know, membership group spans various age groups, all of the branches of service, and a number of individuals that have experienced combat and a fair amount that haven't. But a common thread, though, is those thoughts of suicide, anxiety, depression doesn't discriminate based on combat. And so I think being able to, for Dan and Alex to raise awareness to that and to talk about that to servicemen and women that are still active duty and even veterans, that if you haven't experienced combat or you have all of your limbs and all of your, you know, your fingers, that you're fine and that your struggle, you know, isn't enough. I think that's a stigma that we absolutely want to break. And to know that the anxiety, the depression, the post-traumatic stress, the thoughts of suicide, like I said, doesn't discriminate. People come in to the military with a variety of different backgrounds. And being in the military, I would say, again, as a civilian, there's a fair amount of stress at all times, even if you're not in combat. And so being able to talk about those things, as Dan said, to know when you need help, as Alex pointed out, that those individuals that are saying, I need help, you know, are recognizing they have that insight and that awareness and they want to feel better. Nobody likes waking up in the morning thinking, I can't do this anymore.
For all of you, what I'm struck with is how far we've come. I think about my dad, World War II, who never mentioned anything until he developed Alzheimer's, and then he would talk about it. And I think about people who I have grown up with. We're really making strides. Obviously, this is important what we're doing right now. But I am impressed with all of you, and Dr. Fletcher and Alex in particular, from the medical standpoint, that it's not only uncomfortable for the members of the military, but for those who are trying to care for them, because you're breaking boundaries as well.
Dave, I think that's such an incredibly important point. This is a very hopeful time as it comes to treatment options. We have interventions that work, that are effective, that it doesn't need to take 25 years to feel better. We don't have to white knuckle our way through this. The program that I run, Warrior Care Network, offers a 2-week accelerated treatment program where you start feeling better and see meaningful change on day three of these 2 weeks. The results last well past a year from your time in treatment. And so getting that message out that there's people who want to help and there's help that is available and that works is incredibly important.
Before we wrap this up, I'm sure there are many good questions that I should have asked and I just did not. So I want to go around the room and let you all have a chance to sort of sum up your thoughts. Dr. Fletcher, let me start with you.
Being willing to either ask for help or answer a question honestly when somebody that knows you comes up and says, hey, doesn't look like things are going well. Can I help? Will make a world of difference because we know that there's treatment that works and that it doesn't have to be the same for everybody. Not everybody's willing to jump right into therapy right off the bat. Totally fine. Wounded Warrior Project in particular has a variety of different mental health programs, physical health and wellness thoughts. Programs
that are designed in the military is to one build that is still very much a taboo.
Coping skills,
in a sense, the subject of post-traumatic stress disorder is still something that is has a stigma to it, and within the military, and we're all fighting very hard to change that, to let people know whether you're active duty, reservist, or you are retired, or just you've gotten out, that there is help, there is. Plenty of people. There are plenty of people out there that want to give you a hand, and you're not alone.
Alex, I'm going to let you bring it home for us.
I loved being in the military, and I love my career field of taking care of airmen. I believe in the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention to the degree that I walked away from 12 years to come and be part of this team, and I just want to make sure that there's a chance to tell people why. And the reason is because we really do. If you're listening to this, you have agency. In this issue, in your community, and at a national level, we're making sure that there's funding for crisis response lines. You know that we're making sure that mental health is included in healthcare packages that pass. And this is stuff that it's all happening from the community. And so, suicide is a pretty easy to try to address. It's a health issue. It's a education issue. It's a policy issue. It's a support issue. And it's a knot that you have to pull out from every angle, but. Whether you have all the time in the world to be like an institutionalized volunteer, or if you just, some the most important volunteers we have are the ones who show up one time and unload a truck to put on these events that help us raise this research.
Thanks for listening for KCBS and In-Depth. I'm Mary Hughes.
You've been listening to KCBS In-Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.